Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Carrie Peck is in our studio, the elder law attorney who frequently joins us to talk about wills and estate plans and trusts and stuff like that.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Nice to see you, Mr. Peck.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Okay, so this is a story, Carrie, I wanted you to comment on, and it's about Rupert Murdoch. Arguments in the trial over Rupert Murdoch's effort to change his family trust and hand sole control of his empire to his eldest son concluded Monday. The Reno, Nevada probate commissioner hearing the case did not render a verdict, leaving the billionaire and his children to wait for a final ruling from the court. The case will determine the future of some of the highest profile media properties in the world. Through a family trust, Murdoch, now 93, owns 40% of the voting stock in both Fox Corporation, the parent of Fox News, and News Corporation, which owns the Wall Street Journal and the Times of London, among other things. And the long story short is that Rupert Murdoch, I guess, wrote or issued a irrevocable living trust, which would hand control of his empire over to his four kids. Lachlan, the oldest, is the one who likes what he sees on TV. The other three kids don't. But if they all got equal shares, the three kids will dismantle Fox as you know it, or they'll dilute it. It won't be a right-wing piece like it is now. Well, now Rupert's not crazy about that, and the brother Lachlan, who they're estranged from now, doesn't like it either. So it's a whole succession family dynamic. But I don't understand how, if Rupert is still alive, how is it that he can't just say, I changed my mind? It's his stuff, and he's still living. Why can't he just say Lachlan is the heir apparent?
Well, John, the issue here really is the term irrevocable. And Rupert created an irrevocable trust. And basically, the term irrevocable means it can't be changed.
Why would you do that in your lifetime?
Well, you might want to do it to assure some continuity, to assure the succession.
Right. But then you changed your mind.
Then you changed your mind. And it's quite clear that Rupert believes that Fox is better off in its current space as a right-wing, so to speak, TV station. And three of his children don't agree. The one child he wants to give it to, as you pointed out, agrees that this is where they should be.
Well, they'll make more money if they keep doing what they're doing. That's a cash cow.
We agree. But the question here really is, number one, why would you do it? And my answer is, in general, we don't recommend irrevocable trusts for exactly this reason. Circumstances change, people change, the family changes, and you don't have the ability to change it without going to court. And so Rupert's gone to court in Nevada. If we were here in Illinois, you could go to court, but the court would have to conclude that if the changes were allowed, that all of the beneficiaries in the Murdoch case, all of the children, were treated equitably. So I'm not sure that under Illinois law, the court would allow, if Rupert were here in Illinois, him to give all of the stock to Lachlan, one child, because the other three would have been cut out. So that's not equitable treatment. And at the end of the day, you know, it remains to be seen under Nevada law what they decide out there. But there's no question that this is a major, massive case involving, as you pointed out, you know, Fox News, the Wall Street Journal, the London Times. Rupert has accumulated a media empire.
Is there such a thing as a revocable living trust?
Revocable living trust is what we would use every single day.
Yeah. Right, because as you live, then you would still have the opportunity to change it. None of us knows when we're going to die, so I guess maybe that's the value of an irrevocable living trust. You put in concrete what you want to happen, and if you get hit by a bus tomorrow, it's problem solved. But I guess a revocable, put it this way, if you issue a revocable living trust and then you die, would the heirs have the opportunity to change that trust?
No, absolutely not. The only person that can change a revocable trust or a revocable living trust is the person creating that trust. So in this case, if hypothetically this were a revocable Murdoch trust, Rupert would have the ability to change it. There's no benefit to having an irrevocable trust, but for what you say.
I'll speculate that maybe the value of that would have been to say to the media landscape and the world that the corporation is going to be in good hands, the kids will continue to have it, nothing can change that, so Fox can continue to operate as it does. But then, after the election, maybe the kids start to not like the direction that the network has gone or the influence it wields, and they realize there's a rift. So where he thought maybe that was sending a signal of solidarity and the continuation of the brand, now he realizes that the brand is in jeopardy with the other kids, the three of them, exerting influence over the way the network would go.
Well, that's possible, but it dawns on me that potentially the reason that Rupert has his media empire in an irrevocable trust, meaning it can't be easily changed, is because Rupert has a propensity to acquire wives. And if the media empire is in an irrevocable trust, that means the wives aren't going to get their hands on it. And so that's probably the reason he created it.
Jerry Hall was one of his wives. Is she the current wife now?
I don't think so. I think he recently married his, I'm not sure, fourth wife, but I'm not sure.
Let's talk to Kathy. You're on WGN. We're talking to Kerry Peck, the elder law attorney. And I guess this is an elder law issue. The man's 93 years old. But as much as you talk about irrevocable or revocable living trust, I've heard you say living trust all the time on our show. Lo and behold, it's writ large now in this case. Kathy, what did you want to say? You're on the air.
My father, who is 92, remarried a younger woman, and they have a will and it's a will where all of his assets go to her if she outlives him, which is probably going to be the case. And then when she passes, the proceeds will go to me, my brother, and her biological daughter. We've wanted them to have an irrevocable trust, my brother and I, because as soon as he dies, she's going to change the will so that all of his assets go to her own child. And there doesn't seem to be an understanding on my dad's part that this is what will happen, and it's patently unfair.
Well, Kathy, regrettably, I think your analysis is 100% correct. After your father dies, she will change the documents and leave everything to her child. I think the only way to really, go in the direction you want to go is you're going to have your father see an attorney who can explain that to him in the terms that we're talking, because you're absolutely right. That's exactly what's going to happen, and you and your brother are going to get cut out.
Well, it has been explained to him multiple times, and his response is, "Oh, my wife will never do that."
Is she in the room? Is she in the room when you have this conversation?
And she says, "Oh, I will never do that."
Well,
but I know it's not true.
Well, Kerry, couldn't they put something in writing that would enforce what Kathy just said? You promised us you wouldn't do this.
Well, Kathy's suggesting that Dad do it irrevocably, and so that when Dad dies, there are not going to be any changes. And I think that it's a good suggestion. If Dad's not on board, Kathy, then, there really is no methodology to do it. I'm assuming Dad is mentally competent. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Well, as much as he can be at 92.
How old is the wife, the new wife?
She's 20 years younger than him.
Yeah, no, she's not 20. So she's in her 70s, huh?
Yes, and she's not much older than I am.
Well, I wish I had a good solution for you, but the reality is if he's mentally competent, you know, he's able to do it and he's able to resist your proposed changes. But there's no question you've hit it dead on. You're correct. And I would encourage you to bring him to another lawyer.
Is it, go ahead, Kathy.
Is there a possibility that we could take the will at of his death and use that to sue our stepsister because was not his intent for his assets, which were sizable compared to our stepmother?
Not sure I follow that. Did you, Carrie?
No, but I think what you're saying is post-death, can you use his intent? And you can use his intent to probably file the lawsuit, but I'm not banking that that's a winning lawsuit. I think that once she inherits the assets, those assets are hers.
Is there any way that you, is there animosity between your stepsister, you, and your stepmom, I guess? Do y'all get along?
No. They all get along, but here's the thing is, my stepsister has not been a good steward of her money, and she's going to, quote-unquote, need it more.
Yeah. Oh, so the mother will be inclined to share it more with her.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, that's the story for now. you can get a hold of Carrie Peck if you want a longer conversation, but Kathy, thank you for your thoughts on that today.
Okay, thanks a lot. I appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow. You hear stuff like that too, I guess, huh?
We hear it all day long. Yeah. I mean, honestly, people in their second, third marriages. I mean, it's usually, as you point out, John, a big age difference, and in general, the primary family at the beginning gets screwed.
Okay, well, I got to take a break. When we come back, though, just give me the shortest definition you can of what is a will, what's an estate plan, and what's a living trust, because we throw these things around and evidently they're not interchangeable. Carrie Peck is here, the elder law attorney. PeckRitchie.com is the website, PeckRitchie.com. You can always call his office, 312-201-0900, 312-201-0900. Okay, will, estate, and trust. What's a will?
So I'm going to start with the estate plan because estate plan encompasses a will, usually what we call a pour-over will, which means literally the assets pour over into a revocable living trust. Estate plan also includes a power of attorney for health care, which is you name someone while you're competent to make decisions for you regarding your health management, and a power of attorney for property. Likewise, while you're competent, you name someone to make decisions in the management of your assets. So most estate plans today include a will, a living trust, a revocable living trust, unlike the Murdoch trust, and a power of attorney for health care and a power of attorney for property. So why do we use a living trust? You want a definition? We use a living trust to avoid probate. If you put your assets into a living trust, and literally you have to change the title of your assets. So, for example, if it's a house or a condo, you have to put it into the living trust, and it avoids probate. In Illinois, if you die with assets in your name alone, not in joint tenancy, not in a living trust, in your name alone, I die with a condo and a bank account, the law requires that we open a post-death court proceeding called probate. And the purpose of that is so your creditors can come in and make claims against you, and administration of the estate so those assets pass through probate. It's now clear title, and you can pass them to your heirs, your relatives, your children, et cetera, et cetera.
If you're if rather than passing assets on to the family, if somebody dies with debt, does the family assume that?
It depends how it goes. Sometimes creditors, let's assume hypothetically that somebody owes some money on a mortgage and they die with a mortgage on their condo or their house and there's no probate proceeding open. Often creditors go in and open a probate proceeding to file a claim against the estate. That claim is seeking the payment of their debt.
What if I had a credit card and it was $10,000?
Same exact scenario. Creditor goes in and opens an estate to claim money on the debt.
Do they do that?
Yeah, they do it regularly.
Yeah. You know, back to the Murdoch case, though. So he had an irrevocable living trust, maybe, as you said, to shield money from his many wives. We looked it up. There are five. The latest lovely lady, Alina Zhukova from Russia, 30 years his junior, but who knows what the prenuptial agreement was. But
right.
An irrevocable living trust might have insulated all of these wives from some of his assets. He wants them to go to the kids, and he wants to maintain his empire. And that's why that's in a Nevada court now. The kids don't agree with his vision, at least three of them don't. But sometimes the argument is the way businesses are run, that there is a fiduciary claim that the business owner has to do what's best for the people that hold stock in that company. I wonder if that's in play here. If Murdoch could say, well, I have an irrevocable living trust, it will not be in the best interest of this corporation, News Corp, if the kids take control of it, because they're going to gut Fox News. You think that would play?
Well, I think it would play. The question, of course, is, are any of those shareholders in this case? And at least the public accounts so far that we've seen, and don't forget this was sealed, so there aren't a lot of public accounts, but so far the public accounts that I've seen and I've read indicate that it's exclusively the children and dad.
Yeah.
But it's possible. I think it's a good argument, John.
I absolutely have a will, says 630. Why would I want to trust?
Well, the answer, 630, is that if you own assets in your name alone in excess of $100,000, regardless of the type of asset that is, could be real estate, could be a bank account, could be stock, if it's in your name alone in excess of $100,000, the law requires we open a post-death court proceeding called probate. The use of a living trust eliminates the necessity for that post-death court proceeding and eliminates the liability, so to speak, of owning $100,000 in your name alone, forcing additional expense in the courtroom.
But it doesn't keep you from having to pay your bills. Like if you were in debt, the creditors would still be able to lay claim to your assets, right?
They would. They would open the probate estate that you avoid.
Can Carrie better explain and define advance directives? Thank you. I listen frequently. We appreciate the way he explains things.
Well, thank you, listener, and let me say that an advance directive is a power of attorney. It's a fancy term for power of attorney. So in Illinois, we have two types, a power of attorney for property, management of assets, and a power of attorney for health care. Often the term is used, advance directives. It means exactly the same thing.
Carrie, just in case that lady Kathy is still listening, who said that her elderly father with a younger wife is probably going to leave all of the assets to her, and then when she has control of the assets, she's going to leave them to her daughter and write out his kids. That was Kathy. Could Kathy's dad do a Trust A and Trust B? Does that make any sense?
Well, Trust A and Trust B is typically a tax savings device. So you could do it in your living trust, but it's not going to change Kathy's problem. Kathy's problem is a very common second, third, fourth marriage problem.
My dad has a trust but got remarried. He thinks nothing will change. I think his marriage overrides it all, does it?
His wife will have the ability to what we call enforce her statutory share. And she's going to get a minimum of a third and perhaps, depending on the circumstances, up to a half. But
Because she's the wife.
Because she's the wife.
Even if she wasn't included when the trust was written, she's going to get a third either way.
Absolutely minimum.
Okay. That's Carrie Peck. PeckRitchie.com, 312-201-0900. A lot of ground covered today.
Thank you, John. Pleasure to be here.